everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 244. Today we're going to be talking about Angel season 4 episode 8, Habeas Corpses, and Buffy season 7 episode 12, Potential. My name is Karen. I'm a super fan, joined by fellow super fan Caitlin this week. Yay, we usually don't get to podcast together. And I'm also joined by newbies Brittany and Kristen. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
As usual, if you would like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr. And let's see, fun facts so you guys can get used to our voices. Does anyone have one to kick us off?
I do.
Anyone really excited? Caitlin, you go ahead.
So I just discovered the most wonderful, delightful thing on Hulu, which is a little Christmas special called Puppies Crash Christmas.
Oh my God.
It's literally 30 minutes of puppies set loose on a Christmas decorated house and they just wreck everything. Like, they destroy the presents, they eat ornaments and tear down the tree, and they eat Santa's cookies, and they spill a bowl of milk that was left out for Santa, and they like take down the turkey that was on the table. And there are all these little like references to shows that are airing on Hulu throughout. Like, on the mantle at one point there's a picture of like the Golden Girls, and like one of the like presents that's unwrapped is something from 30 Rock, and it's just hilarious and adorable and delightful. And it's got like this classical music playing in the background while these puppies are just being adorable and just wrecking everything. And it's basically everything I never knew I needed in my life, and it's now my favorite thing ever. So you should go watch Puppies Crash Christmas on Hulu.
Sounds adorable.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's great. Kristen, what about you? Kristen and I are separated. I'm currently in New York, so yep. My roommate is far, far away.
Well, besides building a fort out of all of the boxes that Karen has had delivered to the apartment, there's just a lot of deliveries this year. I had a bunch too, so they're just building up. No,
Mine just came late because I'm a slacker.
It's all right. No, today is the beginning of a week of vacation that I saved and took this week because I always hate going back to work right after Christmas. Like, I want those extra days to enjoy my presents and to like do fun things while my brother is actually in town and like all this stuff. So I'm very excited to be on break from work for a full 7 days, and then I will return next Saturday. But it's going to be great. I actually got a copy of Katie McGarry's next book that comes out in January. I got it yesterday, and I'm really excited because that's going to go on the top of my list of things to do next week, on top of all the other books that I want to read that I haven't had time to in the last month. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot to do, but it'll be fun things.
Nice. That does sound fun. I'm a little jealous. I love Katie McGarry. She's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Brittany, what about you? What's been going on?
My fun fact is that I have been done Christmas shopping for a week now, and I don't know what to do with myself. So
you volunteer to edit Rewatchable.
So I volunteer to edit Rewatchable because I have so much time to fill. Normally, I don't usually put off Christmas shopping, but I always forget something. I have like 100 lists scattered around my room of me just writing out everyone I need to get gifts for just to confirm that I am actually done. So I'm wasting so much time confirming that I'm done. And it feels so weird because everybody told me what they wanted early enough, or I had an idea, and my office gifts were super easy this year, and everything just came together, which is nice because work has been so super stressful that like I just wouldn't have had time to do anything anyway. And I was able to order everything early, and my parents were easy for the first time ever. And, you know, luckily Cursed Child happened because that took care of a lot of Christmas gifts. So whether you like it or not, family, you're getting Cursed Child tickets.
I was like, did you just say lucky Cursed Child happened?
Yeah, because it took care of a lot of Christmas.
I think that gets you an automatic ban from Hypeable.
Yeah, I know. I feel it. I feel something bad happening when Andrew returns from his Christmas break.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I almost just don't feel like it's Christmas because I'm not stressed and crying and worrying about wrapping things. So everything's coming up, Brittany, this holiday season.
Oh, so. Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, anyone who knows me knows that I'm a bit of a Grinch. I don't really care about Christmas all that much. Although I did get in the holiday spirit because booze were involved. My friends and I went on a Christmas bar crawl called Santathon in Queens. And we, you know, everybody wears like ugly sweaters and stuff. We got ugly Christmas dresses and mine's really ridiculous. It has like reindeer all over it and stuff. And it was actually a lot of fun and we all drank way too much, but it was really cool. And it actually kind of did get me in the holiday spirit. So that was nice. This is the bane of Kristen's existence, by the way, the fact that I don't really like Christmas.
I just don't understand how anyone cannot like Christmas. Like,
it's too much. It's just too much.
There's nothing not to like. It doesn't make sense.
It's too much joy. I can't have this much joy in my life.
I will say it is way too many like cookies. So I have done nothing, but for the past two nights, I've done nothing but eat what my coworkers have like baked. We had a cookie bake off and then people have just been giving me like baked goods as gifts, which, hey, not complaining. I had some of the best banana bread of my life for breakfast this morning from my coworker. But like they ordered us lunch yesterday because a lot of people took off in my company. So the people who were there got lunch and they ordered pizza and salad, which like fine. I ate the largest plate of salad with like not even a little bit of dressing on it because I just needed something that was not filled with sugar. I was so happy when I saw the salad. It was like my body was like, yes, please give me that salad.
Vegetables.
I know. It was like, because I can't, like, I haven't been able to say no to anything. I've been eating, like, you know, truffles and candy canes and cookies and brownies and these, like, amazing cookie bars that I, like, took home a whole tray of because they were so good. And, oh, my God. So, yeah, rejoicing in the salad. Never thought that would happen.
I should send you some of the cookies that I made. Ricotta cookies with cream cheese frosting.
Oh, my God. Those are my favorite. We make them every year. Like, we put lemon in the, oh my God, I can't, it's so much.
Speaking of banana, by the way, this is a story for Kristen mostly because she knows how much I hate bananas. We went to trivia and we didn't win or anything, but third place left. So we got the pity bottle of booze that they were giving out. It was banana Bacardi rum. Like, out of all the different flavors we could have won. We got the banana one.
You hate Christmas and bananas? What is wrong with you?
And coconut.
She also hates coconut.
Well, I hate coconut too, so.
But like coconut flavored anything. Like she won't even drink coconut rum.
Oh God, it's so gross.
Like my pina colada, when I get it, because I love pina coladas, disgusts Karen. Like she looks at it like, what is wrong with you?
And I'm like, I don't literally eat anything except for like five things. And those five things happen to be like Kristen's favorite things.
Yeah. Like bananas, mint, coconut. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah. I don't like shaved coconut because like it makes me like it freaks me out. I don't like the texture and it bothers me so much. But I love coconut flavored things. Like that's fine. I just can't eat the shaved coconut. But I also hate mac and cheese. So like I'm used to the food hate like coming at me. People are like, we had a mac and cheese bar at our holiday party and the line was so long and I just like I got on the slider bar line multiple times in the time it took people to get one bowl of mac and cheese and I'm like, suckers.
It's funny. Let's talk about some dead things now.
All right, I guess.
That seems like a good idea. Was that a good transition? That seems transition, festive. Like. All right, so we've got Angel, episode 408, Habeas Corpses, which everybody loves the title of this one. And in this episode, Angel has 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one because he finally told Cordelia and her boy to get the F out of his house. Meanwhile, Connor gets trapped inside a literal zombie apocalypse, but unfortunately makes it out still alive. And Leslie and Lila continue to toy with my feelings, my being Ariana's feelings. Why, oh, why am I so invested in this dumpster fire? All right, so to kick this off, after watching Connor and Cordy get their bang on, Angel goes home and he's pissed. Cordelia wakes up with a little bit of regret. she's not thinking that she did the right thing. She's like, look, last night was great. Like, we both needed this, but it's not going to happen again. And Connor kind of storms out of there. So newbies especially, were you guys relieved that Cordy was like, it's not going to happen again? Or does that not even come close to making up for the fact that it happened in the first place?
Oh, the latter. Are you kidding me? It was like coming back into Angel. I'm like, okay, yes, Angel, been a while, ready to dive back in. First scene, I'm like, damn it, why? Like, why is this happening? So yeah, no, it doesn't make up for anything. This is the worst plot line to ever plot line on both series, which is really saying something.
Yeah, I completely agree with Brittany. Like, she looks over and she's like, just like, she looks over at him and then freaks out. And I'm like, now you're freaking out? Now you're really? No.
And also,
none of this is okay.
Like, how he is such a child, both literally and just like the way he behaves. And he like storms out. And he's like, well, fine, whatever. You know, I don't need this. And then, like, okay, do you see what you're doing? Like, don't you remember just caring for him as an infant? Like, I don't know, maybe like six weeks ago? Yeah. Gosh.
Ugh. It's so uncomfortable. Like, watching her be a little bit embarrassed, and I'm like, no, like, that's not helping anything. And then she's like, this can't happen again. And I'm like, it should never have happened. Like, why is, yeah, no, it's just.
The worst part for me was the way that he was, like, rubbing her arm and kissing her shoulder and stuff after. And it was just. No, okay, scrub it out.
I can't even handle, like, Pete Campbell, older adult Mad Men actor being, like, sexy or trying to have a romantic relationship on television. So this younger Pete Campbell-esque thing that I'm looking at just really grossed me out.
Yeah. Okay, so Caitlin, what about when Cordelia comes back and she's trying to talk to Angel, and he's clearly very mad and he's trying to keep it in and not tell her that he saw what happened and everything. She's obviously keeping that from him as well. What about the friction there? What did you think of that?
So 99 out of 100 times I would be pissed at the guy in this situation,
mm-hmm.
because you don't have any right to the woman's body and her agency. Get over yourself. But at this point, this plot line is so awful and disgusting and horrible. I don't even care that, like, 99% of the time I would find his reaction horrible, because it really is horrible and everything is awful and just nothing is okay about this. And I'm with Angel on this one. It's horrible.
Although I have to disagree with you, I think one thing is not awful about this. Fred and Gunn come back together. Cordelia comes back too, and everything's awkward and strange, but at least Fred and Gunn are back together, and they're really cute, and they missed each other, and they're hugging, and it felt right again, which made me so happy.
But it's ruined by Wesley, like, glowering in the background. I'm so over him.
That's, oh my gosh. And the little comment he made, I don't even remember what it is now, but, like, he makes me really uncomfortable. I get that he loves Fred, although, in a way, like, I don't think they've really had enough interaction for him, at least on screen, for him to love her the way that he does in kind of an all or nothing way, because I can understand him being infatuated with her, but it feels deeper than that, and I don't feel like what we've seen kind of backs that up. It's not a reason for him to feel deeper. Then again, like I said, maybe off screen, like, they've had a lot more time together, but he's got this, like, serial killer vibe about him. Like, he looks at her with this, like, if I can't have you, no one can kind of thing, and it kind of freaks me out sometimes.
Well, do you guys want to hear the
Billy.
Do you guys want to hear the least shocking thing in the world?
What?
I love it so much.
Oh, my God. Brittany! Why? Why do you love it?
Okay, so Wes came on, like, the screen in this week's episode, and I was like, okay, forgot how, like, beat up, like, actual rogue demon hunter looking Wes, like, how hot he is. And I was like, okay, like, this whole thing with Fred, I completely agree with you, Karen. I don't think we've seen enough to justify this infatuation, like, at all. And he's been so preoccupied with so many other things. Like, how would his brain even have time to think about Fred or form any of these feelings? Because he was so focused on Connor and getting rid of that. And then he's got, like, Lila distraction. But when he was, like, kicking Lila out, I was like, yes, finally, victory for Angel, the show. And then, I don't know. He's, like, very good at brooding. Like, he's been hanging around with Angel far too long, and he picked up a few things. And I kind of like it. I don't know. I was like, okay, it doesn't make sense. I'm not sure about this whole Fred-Wes relationship thing, but I'm kind of liking what's being thrown down acting-wise. Give me all the brooding, angry, punchy Wes.
I will agree with you. I actually do like this Wesley a lot. I think that his arc has been really interesting. And I just don't like his interactions with Fred. It just, you know, like I said, it doesn't feel like it's founded on anything. However, his relationship with Lila is so complicated and interesting to me. And I know Ariana really likes it, and she's kind of heartbroken. Wesley breaks up with Lila, like, for real in this episode. And kind of just gauging, are you guys excited about that, or are you a little sad?
I don't know how to feel.
That's fair. That's also an option.
That is the mantra of Rewatchable since we started Buffy. I don't know how to feel.
I don't like them because I hate Lila. I really do. Like, she's been nothing but a pain in the ass for, like, you know, 4 seasons now.
Yeah.
I don't like her. But there is something twisted and weird that works. And I get why Ariana is, like, obsessed, because there is this thing between her and Wes that just, they're both outcasts. They both have lost things. It just works. And so it's really strange, but I really don't know how to feel about it. I'm glad that he ended it, because it's not a healthy relationship, really. Not all that healthy to kind of hate each other at the same time. I also feel bad because she was really into him, and you kind of can tell by the last couple of episodes that she is definitely way more invested in this than he is. And yeah, there's all kinds of mixed up, weird, twisted feelings in me, and I'm not really sure how I feel. But I feel bad for Lila, which, what? And I also like Wesley, and I like what this has given him. Like, it's given him a little bit of confidence, but I also don't think he needs to be chasing after Fred either. So there's just a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lila is complicated. I don't particularly like her, but I also felt bad for her. And I think the reason why I felt bad for her is because, like you said, she's been a pain in the ass for 4 seasons. However, she's had those few shining moments where you can see this glimmer of light inside of her. And I think most people kind of like to see that in somebody. They like to have hope for a character. I mean, there are some characters that you love to hate, and I think for some people, Lila is that character. But for me, I kind of grabbed onto that and said, okay, she's not 100% evil. Like, she actually does care about Wes. That's the crazy thing. She really cares about Wes, and she wants to help him, and she wants to be better. She's still doing her own thing. And I mean, that's what made her so interesting from the beginning, is that she was always kind of in control. She always found a way to survive. She was always very strong-willed. But then she met Wesley, and for a few seconds, every once in a while, she chooses to do the right thing because of him. And I like that hope that's inside of her. So when Wes goes to save her, because she's at Wolfram & Hart when the zombie apocalypse is happening, I don't know, I kind of feel for it a little bit. What do you think, Caitlin?
Well, I stick by my comment that Lila is who Wesley really belongs with, while Fred is more his idealized version. But I really think Wes is full of shit when he breaks up with her, because he's picking a side. He's calling everything black and white.
Yeah. And
I love Lila's speech to him after. She's basically saying, yeah, you put them together, you get gray, and you're never going to get black or white out of it. Afterwards, you can't add white to gray. You're only going to get gray. And Wesley at this point exists in shades of gray. Like, he's never going to be a full-on white hat again. So I think he's kind of full of shit, and I'm glad Lila calls him out on it.
Mm-hmm.
But
and since when does them being together have anything to do with what side they're on? You know, like, Wes has always been the good guy, Lila's always been the bad guy, and they were still sleeping together. Like, I mean, that's kind of what attracted them to each other to begin with.
Yeah.
So I agree with you.
I think he's kind of full of it. Like, if you're breaking up with her because you're still hung up on Fred, then at least acknowledge the real reason. We've very much talked about this show is, in ways more than Buffy, exists in the gray areas. So it's very weird to hear one of the grayest characters in a show that's all about the gray areas being like, everything is black and white. You are the least self aware character ever at this moment.
And I feel like that's saying something too.
Very true.
Okay. Did anyone feel bad when Gavin died?
Yeah.
Me too. I mean, I like Gavin because I like Daniel Day Kim. But
yeah,
like,
I think that was clouding my judgment of Gavin. However, I still felt bad.
He was okay. Actually, I have a very real question about this. Because I feel like maybe I forgot something, but like Gavin has been taking orders from Lila and is terrified of her. And I feel like that was really out of character because he's always been like a thorn in her side. It's been a little while. So am I forgetting something major that happened, or is this kind of just something that we're meant to gloss over?
That was since she beheaded their boss.
Yeah. But still. I just feel like he's been kind of a sucker at the end, and I don't know. It's not that important, but I did feel bad for him. Anybody else? Kristen, did you feel bad?
I mean, yeah, he wasn't all terrible, and he didn't deserve to die, and that thing is scary, and yeah. I didn't necessarily like Gavin, but yeah, I still felt bad that he died.
Well, on the plus side, he kind of died and came back, so... You know, living dead. Were you guys expecting zombies?
No.
No, I don't like zombies. I've never liked zombies. I've never actively sought out a zombie movie in my life.
Aww.
So zombies, like, while not thrilled that they're there or were there, you know, it's, they had to come eventually. It's fine.
Yeah.
I did like how this episode was shot. Like, there's not a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of, like, I'm glad I watched it last night because, you know, it was an episode that was very dark, like, literally dark. Like, you mm-hmm. couldn't see anything that was happening. Like, I turned the brightness up on my television.
I'm glad it wasn't just me because it was making me a little crazy.
So okay. It was like watching an episode of Teen Wolf.
Yeah, so, like, I had my light on in my room and I had to shut it off and put the brightness up on my television to watch this episode. I was like, this is a lot of work, Angel. But yeah, I did like the way it was shot, and it was like very creepy and horror movie-esque, like a lot of like slow creeping around. And also Angel mm-hmm. being able to pull off that blazer while like fighting zombies. Who can do that? Who can do that except Ava Boreanaz? Like, it's amazing. It's amazing.
One of a kind, that man.
Yeah. Gosh, it was a little creepy. And I think, you know, you're expecting everybody to be dead, and that in and of itself is kind of creepy. And then, you know, every once in a while, one of them open their eyes and you're like, oh, crap, it's about to go down.
Yeah, like that cut to black after Gavin's eyes open. It's like, bum, bum. Yeah. I'm like, oh, all right, calm down, Angel.
And of course, Connor is still in there. And when Wes gets out with Lila, Wes tells Angel that Connor is still stuck there. So he's like, all right, everybody, let's go. And of course, Lorne, you know, he's going to man home base, which is cool. That's pretty much what Lorne is good at.
Can go I ahead. Just say, I love how openly he has, like, he takes claim of being the person who wants to stay behind and mm-hmm. does it with gusto. Like, he knows that his forte is not going into the field and fighting. He's a lover, not a fighter. And, and like, most characters would feel bad or would try and, like, you know, they'd throw themselves headfirst into danger because that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be brave like everyone else. Like, I love that Lauren is like, nope, that is not my thing. I will stay here. I will man the fort. I will, you know, take phone calls and make coffee. I'm totally fine with that. And that, I just like that he embraces that so much.
And I don't feel like he's a coward either, you know, like he'll go out and he'll fight if he has to. And he did. He went up against the big bad. And I mean, he got thrown around like the rest of them. But I don't feel like he's a coward. I think you're right. You know, that's just not his forte. He doesn't particularly like doing it. He doesn't need to be the hero. He has talents greater than that. And he's comfortable with it. So, yeah, I really appreciate it.
He would also be a liability. Like, everyone else would have to look after him, and he realizes he's not going to serve anyone by going into the field when they all have to protect him.
Exactly.
It's very self-aware of him, and I love him even more. It just dawned on me in this episode that, you know, he's fully aware of his limitations, and he's totally cool with it, and that's awesome.
Now, Angel also tells Cordelia to stay behind. And on the one side, like, I totally get it. I actually really love Ariana's comment in here. She goes, Angel saying, Cordelia, you stay here. You're on timeout from my heart. And I feel like that's really true. But on the other side, like, Cordelia is a really capable fighter now. Not bringing her along is kind of stupid because it would be one more person to help Connor get out of there.
Yeah, but he also has that comment where it's like she is one more thing for him to worry about. So, like, even though, yes, it would be one more person to help, Cordelia, though a strong fighter and has faced many scary things in her lifetime, I don't know. I kind of get Angel's logic there where, you know, if Angel's met with a choice, son or Cordelia, like, that's just another thing for him to worry about.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that says about him telling Fred to come along, though? Do you think that means that he cares about Fred less? Because that's definitely, like, you saw Fred's head kind of kick up, and she was kind of like, wait, so you don't worry about me? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think in that situation, maybe Fred has two other big strong men who want to save her, you know.
True.
She's flanked by love and affection. Whereas,
oh my god, flanked by love.
That is brilliant.
So maybe it. I don't think it. Yes, I do think that in that moment it could be misconstrued as, mm-hmm. Oh, I don't really actually care about you, Fred. But it's sort of like Fred's kind of covered, so maybe Cordelia, like, Wes doesn't care about her that much anymore, so he would just be like, eh, whatever, I'll save Fred. Even though Fred's probably, like, fine, he'd be admiring Fred's fighting skills while Cordelia is being dragged down a hallway by a zombie. And then, like, Gunn, you know, he's all Fred all the time, so I don't know. I think maybe he felt Fred was pretty well taken care of, but also, Angel, read a room, you know?
I think that was one of those instances where, like, it was not what he intended to be that way, but it was kind of a funny, at least nobody took it like way out of context kind of thing. And Fred has been kicking ass, and she knows how to handle herself now, which is really great. What do you guys think about Wes and Gunn still fighting, even though Gunn saved, Wes saved Gunn, dragged him out of there. We were all like, oh, it feels like they're friends again. And then Gunn still hates Wes. I feel like Wes is warming up. I feel like Wes really wants him back, and Gunn's resisting.
Oh, boys, grow up.
Yeah, and when Angel's like, yo, you two, done. Like, you need to just squash this. We've got things to deal with. Like,
yeah.
At this point, even if they're not feeling, you know, lovely and friendshipy toward each other, they can at least put it aside. I mean, they're fighting, like, this apocalypse demon. Like, can we focus on the goal here and, like, not get ourselves killed because we're infighting over this lovely female lady standing right next to me? Like, do better. Like, they can do better. They know how to do this. They know how to compartmentalize and put things aside and focus on the goal and why they're allowing themselves to be distracted. I really don't understand.
See, I put this on Wes because I think Gunn's animosity is that he knows that Wes is still into Fred and would take any opportunity to go after her. And Wes is not being subtle. So how else would you expect a guy whose girlfriend is like in your former best friend's interest supposed to react? Like, I don't know. I think if Wes would tone it down and get over himself a little bit when it comes to Fred, that maybe their relationship could improve.
I'll agree with that. Although I think Gunn needs to take it down a little bit too and just sort of, you know, be comfortable in the fact that Fred is so in love with him, you know? And yeah, it's a little hard not to be defensive of that, especially knowing that Wes is so into Fred, but I feel like Gunn's animosity is not helping the situation, especially when they're dealing with the apocalypse. So, like, that's a thing.
But when are they not dealing with an apocalypse?
That's fair. That's definitely fair. And so, okay, they're all in Wolfram and Hart still, and they realize that the only way they can actually escape out of there is to go back to the White Room with that evil little girl who's super creepy. And they get there, and they're all together. So we've got Wes, Connor, Gunn, Fred, and Angel, right? That's everybody? Yeah, there's five. And the Beast is killing the little girl, sucking some black, dark soul thing out of her. And that was a little bit of a twist. Wasn't expecting him to be there. And she, before she kind of dies and saves them, she says the answer is among you. So newbies, do you have any theories?
When the Beast popped out of the pothole, I kind of wondered if it was connected to one of the two of them because, you know, Connor, birthplace, that's an obvious connection. And with Cordy, it's the whole, like, why is she back? You know, what exactly is going on here? Since Cordy is not with them, I think this puts the you know, diagram arrows pointing directly at Connor. Like, I think Connor and his life force and whatever is, like, allowing him to be there, somehow he's connected to this beastie thing, and that ultimately something's going to have to happen with Connor in order to defeat this thing. I don't know if he has to do the defeating. I don't know if, you know, if maybe he has to die in order for this thing to die. I don't know, but I think Connor's the one tied to it.
Yeah, Connor, I mean, at this point, I feel like everybody, well, I don't know about the super fans, but Connor needs to go. He just needs to go. He's ruining everything. So if Connor is somehow connected, and we get that vibe, I mean, Connor even says something to that effect. You know, Connor's time has been counting down since he was born. Like, I feel personally that this show doesn't work with Connor in the universe. Unless, like, you know, Connor's not actually this baby, you know, maybe the baby is somewhere else and Connor's not really Angel's. I don't know.
You're
don't
still know. Holding out hope, aren't you?
I'm holding out hope that this man child is not a real part of the show and we can just kill him off without anybody having any hurt feelings. So, yeah, hoping that in order to stop the apocalypse, Connor has to be sacrificed and no one gets hurt. So it turns out that Connor's not really Connor or something. Or maybe he goes back to being a baby. It happens on Once Upon a Time all the time. So maybe it can happen here.
Oh, God, that's so true. So they do all escape. The little girl saves them, which is definitely interesting. And they show up back at the hotel and Angel's kind of happy for a split second. You know, he's got his son back. Everybody's fine. Then he kind of sees Cordelia reuniting with Connor and he just goes back into being super pissed off and tells Cordelia and her boyfriend to get out of his house.
Yes.
Does anybody feel bad for Cordelia?
No, she made a horrible decision and should be punished for it.
I mean, okay, so never get on Britney's bad side.
How about just don't sleep with the son of your beau who is only actually like 6 weeks old? That'll take care of it. I want to feel bad for Cordelia because I love her. and I don't like this storyline, and I don't even think Cordelia likes this storyline. Like, I want to feel bad for her, but I don't, because she did this. She could have chosen Angel. He was standing there, but she chose Connor and slept with Connor. So, you know, at this point, I understand why Angel is like, no, get the fuck out of my house. It's time to move on. Like, I totally get it. I totally get it.
We made it this far without saying the F word, Kristen.
Sorry, I realized it as I said it. I was like,
it's okay. It's okay.
Just put the little beep over it. That's
what I mean, it doesn't matter. Natalie says it like every other word, so we haven't gotten in trouble yet. Caitlin, what about you? Do you feel bad for Cordelia at all?
Oh, that's really hard to... At this current moment, no, but also no comment.
I mean, I don't want to feel bad for her because I don't like the decision she's made either. But, like, it's Cordelia, you know? Like, it's kind of hard not to be like, it sucks that they're fighting. Like, I totally understand why they're fighting. And I don't think that Angel's overreacting or anything. Like, he is devastated right now. But, like... like Cordelia getting kicked out of the hotel by Angel is just awful. So let's just hope it fixes itself soon. But that is another no comment, and we'll have to wait. But until then, let's jump into our favorite scenes. My favorite scene was Fred and Gunn reuniting. I think it was the little highlight of this whole episode. It made me really happy, and I loved that. Caitlin, yours. Also a favorite moment. Also loved it.
It's just this tiny little moment, but when the team gets sent back to the Hyperion from the White Room, Lorne is sitting there and he has a drink in his hand and they just suddenly appear and he like stares at his drink like, what is in that? Yeah. And it is the most amazing moment I've ever seen.
Oh, God. I also loved that as soon as they got back from getting beaten up by the beast, he immediately goes and makes a drink. Like, he has his priorities. Also, his suit, beautiful. I love that purple and the yellow together. It was just, it was really great. But that is minor details. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was Wes breaking it off with Lila. I just loved the whole, that whole scene, just the way Lila reacted, the way Wes was like just very adamant about it being completely over. And I know I say finally in here, I wrote that next to my favorite scene, but I think it's just a good step for the show in terms of not that it's over, but that it adds that extra tension to like maybe kick Lila's butt into high gear to do something that mm-hmm. she may or may not regret or take a new direction against Angel or like send Wes to do something, but then eventually maybe they'll reunite and be okay. You know, so, you know, there's a lot going on here. But yeah. I think the finally was just because I feel like both of them need something to push them to do something that's just not having sex, you know, like.
Yeah. That's fair. How awful was it though? Like, I kind of felt bad for Lila when she was like, I can put on the glasses again. And Wes was like, don't embarrass
me. Oh my God. That, like, line, oh. That line was when I came to the dock and was like, okay, favorite scene. He was like, don't embarrass yourself. Cause I was like, ah, like cringing, you know?
Yeah. I was cringing and I felt bad for Lila, but also like, it was a really good line from Wes. And yeah. I don't know. It's complicated.
It's almost as good as the put them back on from
oh my yes. God, like, no, don't remind me of it.
Like, we hate it,
just but like, Wesley, God damn it. Yeah.
anyway, moving on. Scrub it from your eyes. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
I actually really loved the look on Fred's face when Angel tells Cordy that she's staying, but insists that Fred comes. Because in that moment, like, you see... You almost see the whole process go through her head. Like, does that mean he doesn't care about me? No, he just knows I can handle myself. Like, by the mm-hmm. end of that very quick moment, you see this like half smile on her face. Like, he knows I can do this. Like, she kind of feels like even Angel has, you know, belief in her. He knows she can handle herself. Whether that's what Angel meant or not, it doesn't really matter because he, in that moment, was probably just trying to get one over on Cordy because he's pissed at her and, you know, reasonably so. But I just liked seeing what Fred took from that. Like, she could have just been hurt by it, but instead she was like, you know what? No, I understand. I get it. I'm going to help. I'm, you know, a part of this team. Let's go. Yeah. So it was just a nice little moment for her.
I like that, like, nobody made a big deal out of it. Like, it wasn't a plot point to be like, does, you know, Angel even really care about me? That sort of thing. Like, clearly he didn't mean it that way. And I do like Fred when she's empowered like that. All right, favorite lines. Caitlin kind of mentioned mine earlier, but I want to read it verbatim here because it was so good. And it was from Lila talking to Wes when Wes is like, I'm going to pick a side. And Lila goes, funny thing about black and white, you mix it together and you get gray. And it doesn't matter how much white you try and put back in, you're never going to get anything but gray. And this is such a poignant message. And I think that it's really important to keep it in mind, not only for Wes, but also for Angel. Like, Angel has been adding white to his docket for so long, but like, he's still Angel and Jealous is still inside of him. He's still kind of a gray character, even though we know he's the good guy, because there's always that potential that the other side of him can come out. And I think that for Wes, who started off as like this bumbling idiot who could barely do anything and has become, you know, an actual rogue demon hunter in every great sense of the word, I think he needs to understand that he did something terrible and accept it as just part of himself. And the idea that he can keep adding white, but he'll never get anything that other than gray. I don't know. I really like that sentiment, because it doesn't mean you should stop trying, but it also doesn't mean that you shouldn't embrace what you were before and what you've done.
And it really applies to both of them. Like, Wesley was becoming darker gray, while Lila, with that relationship, was becoming lighter gray.
They did balance each other out in a way. My actual favorite line, Caitlin, you stole it. Because it was so good. I love the delivery on this so much. But yeah, go ahead.
So, when Angel and Connor have reunited in Wolfram and Hart, and Connor's like, he goes, what's a zombie? And Angel's trying to explain it. He says, it's an undead thing. So Connor goes, like you? And Angel says, no, zombies are slow-moving, dim-witted things that crave human flesh. And Connor gets this shit-eating grin on his face. Yes. And goes, like you?
Yes.
It's not malicious. It's very teasing. It's like, actually affectionate.
And oh my god, I loved it. Yeah. Oh, it was like, I just love the delivery so much, but they also felt like father and son for like the first time in so long, and they didn't feel manipulative or weird. It was just this like little tiny humorous moment in the middle of a zombie apocalypse, and it was just great timing. Brittany, what's yours?
My favorite line was the best line of the whole episode, and I can't believe I actually got to the dock to get it. But it is the last line of, well, no, I guess Cordelia has the last line. But it's the second to last line of the episode where Angel goes, now, take your new boyfriend and get the hell out of here, and then just leaves. And it's amazing. It was so amazing. I got chills. It was so good. Like, it was so good. If, like, you know, this type of attitude can bring back Angelus, he would be there in, like, full form. Like, Angel just so good.
He was not having it. Not at all. All right, Kristen, what was your favorite line?
I don't necessarily know if it's my favorite, but
okay, good, because I was going to say.
But when it was said, it just, like, got me. Like, it, I don't know. It just landed. The line landed. The writing staff did their job. When Fred says, can you just try to get along? He was your friend. And Gunn goes, heavy on the was. And it just, it's not like a great line, but for some reason it just hit me as he said it. And I was like, that's a really well done moment. So yeah, it's not the best, but still interesting.
Yeah. It makes me sad, but that's right. Okay, let's talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 712 now. This one's called Potential. In this episode, Dawn thinks that she's a potential slayer, and so she decides to help Millie with her vampire problems. Meanwhile, all of the teen girls in the room are picking up on how hot Buffy is for Spike. For anyone who's confused, Millie was the Freaks and Geeks character this actress played. Her character name is Amanda in the show. We know it's Amanda, but we're going to call her Millie.
Oh my god. I kept thinking the whole time, I'm like, oh my god, Millie, shut up.
Like, Millie, oh my god.
I really like her, though. I think it's great. Okay, before we get into the actual discussion, Caitlin, I actually want to ask you, I've been getting really emotional about Buffy lately, like crying just because the show, I feel like, is so good right now. And it's not just that. It's the leadership role that Buffy is taking on and the fact that she's being like the Yoda to all of these potential slayers, and her maturity and the way that she's teaching them, the way that like Giles taught her. I don't know. It's killing me. It's so good. And I keep getting super emotional about it. Is it affecting you at all, or am I alone here?
I am super loving it. I was just struck through the whole episode. Like, she's really good at this.
Yes. Yes. Oh my god.
And she's never like high and mighty, because the potentials like take the piss out of her at times, but it's never in like an undermining way at all. So it's just like there's a good dynamic there, and she's a good teacher. So I am loving it a lot, and I love how she's really coming into her own right now. I think she's fabulous right now.
Mm-hmm. Brittany, what about you? I know that you have been liking Buffy a lot lately. Do you like this version of Buffy?
This episode was so good. Like, it brought out all the stuff that I like about Buffy and that I pick up on in like the looking back, like all the episodes that I do like. It's this type of Buffy where like she is in charge and she's not taking anybody's like BS. I'm trying to censor myself here. I can't have another Kristen slip up. And you know, like I loved the, I'll talk about this later too, but I loved the voiceover stuff of just her, like knowing her worth and her value and her potential, huh? And giving it to this new breed of people and inspiring them. And it's kind of something that she isn't really ever able to do with Willow or Xander. And I think, I know this is going to be blasphemy, but I really liked the Xander scene at the end, because it kind of just shows his place in this universe and just fact of like understanding his role.
Mm-hmm. It's okay to not hate Xander. This is not always a Xander hating space.
I forgot Kristen was on this episode. I'm sorry.
Kristen is on. Xander is not hated beyond all things. It's okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing that just has been making me really emotional, and actually Xander is the one that hit on it, and I know we're jumping way ahead right now, when he gives that speech, is just that, like, they've been doing this for 7 years, Buffy and Willow and Xander. They have been the trio. They've been the core Scooby gang for 7 years. And they've had a rough life. And yet they're still here and they're still fighting. And I don't know. I really love that this is what they decided to do. You know, like they could have, especially Willow and Xander, they could have walked away. It could have been too hard, but no, like Buffy is their best friend and they're good enough people that they decided, because they know what lives in Sunnydale, because they know they can do something to stop it, they're willing to keep fighting that fight. And it just, after all of this time, it feels like so much payoff. Like, I know we had a lot of really low lows in this show, but at the end of the day, these three characters are still fighting side by side. And like, especially as a super fan who has seen the series a couple of times, like that just means so much to me. So sorry if I start crying randomly. Newbies, I hope you get there someday. I have a feeling some of you won't, but that's fine.
No, I will never. Unless I go back and rewatch the episode where Jenny dies, like, I'll never cry over this show.
Gosh.
Like, that is, like, that's the worst thing ever. But it is also,
it was awful.
So far, my, like, favorite watching, like experience of watching this, because I mm-hmm. think back to, like, when I was live messaging you during that, and you let me just go down that path of saying how perfect they were, only to have my heart ripped out. And it's fine. It's fine, Karen. I will maybe forgive you someday, but today's not that day.
That was great.
I mean, if Xander had to go through 6 seasons of being mostly useless and people always kind of telling him that he didn't really contribute much, and like, that, let's face it, that's been the comment on this podcast quite a bit. Like, what is Xander contributing here? Like, why is he still there? All of that happened so that he could be there for Dawn when she really needed someone to be like, mm-hmm. listen, you might not have superhuman strength, and you might not be tapped into the supernatural like Willow, but you are awesome and you have a lot to contribute, and I'm proof of that. Like, I'm still here. I'm not dead. I wasn't, you know, I didn't throw myself in a sacrificial move, which is basically, you know, as without all of that strength and skill and all of that, it could have been his big contribution was to throw himself on the fire. But, you know, if all of that was for him to be here for her in that moment, it was totally worth it, because it was a really beautiful moment for a girl who just needed someone to be like, I get it, I understand, and you still have a lot to contribute. I know you got your hopes up, but like, it's not the end. Like, there's still way more for you to do for us here.
Yeah. And we can talk about that a little more near the end, because I think like that moment is so wonderful, even for people who don't like Xander. It's a really important moment. But let's start at the beginning of the episode. Obviously, at the end of the last one, Buffy, real Buffy, saves Spike. And now Spike is helping with the training of the potential Slayers, which is actually really great because he's a vampire and he's helping them to learn how to fight vampires. And, you know, Buffy has all her lessons and her little moments where she's like, if your instincts are telling you to run away, then you run away. And it's all very good. And again, Buffy is really good at training them. But also, like, everyone notices all the chemistry between Spike and Buffy. Oh, and, so like, when the one girl was like, that's hot, I was like, yes, it is. Caitlin, what about you? I know that Buffy and Spike aren't really your thing.
I mean, it's not my ship, but y'all do you.
There still is a lot of chemistry between them, and I think a lot of it has to do with Spike putting so much faith in Buffy. Again, he was like, you know, she believes in me, that's how I'm not going to give in to the first anymore. That was enough for him to hang on until she did rescue him. He's very much, I don't know, he's still Spike, but he's a lot more reserved now. And I think in this moment, like, that's what the character really needs. He's not quite as sassy and brazen as he has been, but he's been through a lot of crap. And I really like this version of him in this moment.
Yeah, I think that's something that I really picked up on this episode, is that, like, anytime there was an opportunity for him to make a joke, he didn't. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, very noticeable.
Yeah, which, but it doesn't feel off, right?
No, like, no, it's not at good. All. Yeah, it was very good. Like, I liked it a lot more, because it's just like they allowed for that pause where he normally used to feel like he had to fill that pause with something, mm-hmm. like either, you know, to cut her character down or to make light of the situation or just be completely crude. And he didn't feel like he had to do that here, or didn't want to do that, which is, like, a nice change of pace, and also, like, felt earned. Like, he worked, not, I guess he did work because he went through the trials to get his soul back, but, like, he earned those quieter moments.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it is that he really earned it. And it just feels so right now. I mean, I love the other Spike. I love most of the versions of Spike, but this one just feels perfect for this moment. So that's really cool. But obviously they're training to be able to come up against whatever else the First is going to throw at them. And right now the First is taking a break. And Ariana was a little confused about this. She was like, what? Not so powerful now? Like, I thought this thing was supposed to be a big deal. It is a big deal. And I think one of the things to keep in mind with the First is that it has eternity. And it's sitting back. It can't do anything itself because it's not corporeal, but it's got to figure out its next plan. And it can waste time, which is good for our heroes because it gives them more time to train and everything like that. But don't get too comfortable with the First taking a break, because it's still out there and whatever it's planning next is probably going to be even worse. So we have that to look forward to.
So the First is like the first of everything, like the first procrastinator.
Yeah.
And the first to be like, you know what? I'm gonna binge this Netflix show instead of making a plan, and then I'll get back to you.
I'm just gonna take a very first nap right now, and you know, when I wake up, have some first coffee, and we'll be ready to go. Oh my god, that's funny. I like that. Switching gears though, Millie. Amanda Millie, shows up at Buffy's office because her mom told her that when a boy likes you, he's mean to you. And so because she likes him, she's going to be mean to him back. And I don't think we really have to go into detail why this is like not a great thing. If there's any youngsters out there, you know, don't be mean to anybody. It's just better that way. If you like somebody, just tell them. I know it's hard, but don't be mean. Don't pull pigtails or punch people. It's not good. But obviously, Buffy kind of centralizes this, and she starts talking about her relationship with Spike. And for those out there who ship Buffy and Spike, she kind of goes on this little spiel about, like, it's over. Yeah, it's like, it's totally over. Which means that it's kind of not over, that she still has feelings for him. So how did you guys take that?
I think I just always assumed that she still had feelings for him. Like, mm-hmm. I never assumed she didn't. So seeing her, like, you know, insisting that it's one thing, you know it's not. You know she still definitely has some feelings there. And the girls saw it in, like, you know, 2.5 seconds. So,
yeah. I think it's nice. I mean, I ship them, obviously. I don't necessarily need them together right now because there's a lot of other stuff going on. But yeah, I mean, it's been obvious that she cares about him. She thinks he's useful and he needs to be part of the team because he can help. That's not the only reason why she was going after him. So
I think it's also that she's trying to figure out what or who this new Spike is. Like,
yeah.
It's still... He's still, like, his new character. He's figuring it out. She's figuring it out. And she's not willing to just let that go until she has some answers. And I think that's something that was frustrating me a few episodes ago. But I kind of get it now after, like, we had that conversation. I think Caitlin was on there, too, where it's like, they don't have all the answers. So, like, it's like, oh, she should just kill him. Like, why didn't she just kill him? That would have been the solution to everything. But it really... wouldn't have been the solution to anything. So this exploration is ongoing and important. And so those feelings, like romantic or otherwise, are still kind of there. But I think it's more of the like character exploration of Spike.
Mm-hmm.
And those other feelings are mixed in with that. So it's kind of confusing. So I don't know if it's like she's like, oh, yes, totally like sexually attracted to you. But I think that's buried under a like a bigger mission to figure out who this new person is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that the best kind of moment for that, too, was Buffy's conversation with Andrew when Buffy was like, yeah, the difference between you and Spike is that you were a shitty person out of your own free will. And like Spike had a lot of other things going on. He was a demon and he was controlled by the First. Not to say that Andrew wasn't being manipulated by the First, but like even before that, he was a human and he decided to do terrible things. And it's kind of hard for me at least, I don't know, maybe you guys feel different. Like, Andrew is such a bumbling idiot most of the time that I don't really hate him because he's kind of just stupid and funny to laugh at. But you also have to remember, like, he did do some terrible things. I don't know. I guess that's a good time to ask, like, how you guys are feeling about him right now, because he's been untied from the chair. He's showered, so yay for him. And he's kind of just hanging around with some commentary right now, not really being very useful, but he at least is, I don't know, not actively working against them. So do you like his comic relief at least? Do you care that he's there at all, or do you wish he would just go away?
I kind of love how much Xander just is not about his, like, fan culture stuff. Like, Xander is a fan of a lot of things. Like, he's talked about stuff before. He's made the references. We've all heard them. But, like, I love the interplay between the two of them. Like, Xander has someone who he is superior to. Like, because of the choices that... Because of the choices that Andrew made. Because of, like, just who he is in the show. Like, Xander has a little bit of a right to feel a little superior to him. Like, he, you know, Xander's on Team Buffy. He's always been on Team Buffy. He's always been on the right side, you know, most of the time has been on the right side of things. In this moment, he kind of can talk down to Andrew, and he's never really been able to do that because, as we saw at the end of this episode, like, you know, he's not the big hero. And so I've liked seeing him be able to, like, not necessarily put Andrew down, but, like, it's just been nice to see him have the confidence to be, you know, like, I'm not the lowest rung on the ladder. Like, I'm not the last person in this group. Like, he's the least useful one, clearly. And I'm, you know, I can contribute more than he can. Like, that's more or less what I've seen coming out of Xander the last couple of episodes. And I really like it. That said, I loved Buffy's little speech here about, like, Andrew and the free will thing, and it was so on point, and, like, it just reminds you of everything that Andrew's done. Like, it's easy to forget it when he's standing around and just, like, spitting out jokes and whatever, but for her to remind us, like, yeah, Spike may have killed people, but he wasn't in his right mind. It wasn't of his own free will. You had nothing influencing you but yourself and your, you know, terrible love for Warren. So you just, you can go right over there.
Yeah. Which is totally fair to say. And I think Andrew kind of knows that too. Somebody else who's feeling kind of useless at the moment is Dawn. Obviously, we kind of talked about that earlier. She's feeling left out during the potential training. And the cool thing is that Ariana also points out here is, like, she's not really being annoying about it. Like, we see kind of all the sad, longing looks, but she's not being a brat. She's not complaining to her sister. She's not being mean to the girls. She's just kind of, like, down about it. But I had the same question as Ariana, is why isn't Buffy training Dawn alongside the girls? Like, Dawn has already been through some training. She's going to need to know how to protect herself anyway. So even though she doesn't have superpowers, like, neither do these girls. They've kind of got some innate stuff that they're trying to tap into. But why isn't Dawn there also?
Yeah, I think that the most annoying part of this is that it set up the ability for Dawn to be, like, when they thought that Dawn had the, like, you know, the calling of the Slayer or whatever it was when they were doing that spell, where, like, it set up the fact that Dawn could say, like, oh, Buffy wouldn't be happy or something. Like, I just don't get why they're forcing this wedge between these two. Like, it doesn't need to be there. Like, that drama, I feel like, doesn't need to happen. And it's just so annoying. Like, I didn't get, like you were saying, like, why Dawn wasn't interacting with any of these people anyway. But on the other hand, there's always a but with this show. I kind of do like the idea of, not like, but I think it's a smart storytelling point in the show for Dawn to have this, like, fear of, like, oh, I shouldn't be close with these girls because they pretty much mean that Buffy has to die. But I don't... Okay, can we talk about this? I'm sorry. I know this is a tangent now, but does Buffy need to die in order for one of them to be the Slayer? Or does Faith needs to die?
Right. We talked about this in the last episode. Buffy is no longer, like...
In the line.
Right. Like, she's still the Slayer because she's come back to life both of those times, but... She's not the next Slayer in line anymore. It's Faith.
So why is this like a thing?
I don't know. And it was bugging the whole time because I'm like, Buffy doesn't need to die, you idiots. Like, I wanted to just yell at them. I'm like, no, Buffy is fine. She doesn't need to die for any of you to be, you know, Slayer to be called. Like, yeah, it was making me crazy too.
I tweeted that too when I was.
Yeah.
I was like, the Slayer line is with Faith, guys. Come on. Like, if the Slayer line were with Buffy, another Slayer would have been called at the end of season 5. Another Slayer was not called because the line is with Faith.
Mm-hmm. I do get that, but at the same time, and I don't know, maybe that's a mistake in the show or they're just thinking about it a different way, but like, Buffy still is the Slayer. She's the one on the front line leading the charge. And I think the point just is like, Buffy's probably going to die. That's what they're all thinking. You know, she's the one who's throwing herself into the fight first. And that kind of sucks for Dawn because she could potentially be called. And if that happens, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's because Faith died or something like that. But Buffy has a very high chance of also dying. So while I think technically this isn't really true, I kind of get the sentiment that they're talking about.
Yeah, and I totally get that as well. It's like, oh, these, like, that future that these girls have as a potential Slayer, if they do become Slayers, is Buffy's, like, what she witnessed Buffy, like, you know, grow into. And I don't know, like, I don't understand why Dawn couldn't be a part of that. She understands what's going to happen to these girls, and maybe she can't. Buffy's trying to be like, no, maybe you shouldn't be around them because you have, like, an idea of how horrible it is and you might bring the whole room down. But Buffy's being really frank with them. Like, yeah, Spike's instinct is to hunt and kill you as fast as humanly possible, or vampire-y possible. So... You know, like, there's no sugarcoating any of this. So I guess I'm just, yeah, I'm in a state of confusion as to why Dawn couldn't be a part of it from the start. And then, of course, it's going to make Dawn has a history of doing this, go off and do her own thing, like she does with Millie or Amanda.
Yeah.
I wonder if this ties into what the Dawn's vision of Joyce had to say, that Buffy won't choose you.
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of Dawn's feelings are wrapped up in that. And I think that there's, I don't know. I mean, we're still at this point trying to figure out what exactly that means and if that was Joyce or not Joyce and how it's going to affect the story later on. But yeah, I think that it has a lot to do with that. Were you guys excited when it seemed like Dawn was a potential Slayer?
See, I am always the sucker with the show. Like, I don't see things coming, but I saw this coming. And I was like, yes, I totally called it. Dawn's a Slayer. She's going to be the next one. This is so great. And then the episode flips it on my head again. And I'm like, no. I was ahead of the game. I totally called this one, and it pissed me off. So I totally saw where they were going with this. Like, you know, with Dawn feeling left out and all of that, like, I totally saw that she was going to be the one that the little glowy light thing found, and I was really excited about it because despite, you know, her feeling left out and, you know, if she was a potential, she would be involved with everything else, I just thought that it would be one more thing for her and Buffy to, like, bond over. Because while you know that if Buffy had the choice, she wouldn't choose this life for Dawn, if Dawn had the calling, if it would be out of their hands. Like, if Buffy didn't need to think about, you know, could she be called, will she be called, like, if it was she could be the next one. This is proof of it. There's nothing I can do about it. Now I just need to train her and make sure she knows everything possible in case she is the next one. Like, I feel like it's one more thing for them to bond over, and it would have just been really lovely to see them, like, in training together and all that. It just, I don't know. I was looking forward to it. And now nothing.
What about you, Brittany? Were you excited?
Yeah, I mean, excited is a strong word for anything on Buffy for me.
That's fair.
Like, following Giles around in Shanghai, if you told me that that was going to be an episode, excited would apply. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it was, what Kristen said is basically my feelings.
Okay. And Caitlin, what about you? Did you want Dawn to be a potential slayer?
I mean, I think it makes sense because the monks literally made her out of Buffy. And mm-hmm. if Buffy is the slayer, it logically follows that Dawn might contain whatever that calling is. But I guess it's not necessarily genetic. It's something else mystical or whatever. But can we just take a second to appreciate Anya calling out the unclearness of the gift and how Buffy like died instead of Dawn? And she was like, yeah, I never really understood that.
Anya, so great.
Okay, I guess I'm alone here on my island. Like, I'm really excited that Dawn isn't a potential slayer because I don't know. I just think that it's nice that she is normal. And it kind of goes back to, like, her conversation with Xander and Xander's speech. And as soon as the light hit her, like, you could tell that's kind of what she wanted. Like, she wanted to be in the fold, but she's also scared. But she wasn't scared enough to, like, not go out and try to find trouble on her own. And I just, I don't know. I'm glad that she's not, because I think it's a more interesting story. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's because I saw the whole, like you were saying, Kristen, like, I saw it coming that she was going to be a potential slayer. And when we found out that she wasn't, I was like, good. Like, that's an even better twist, because it was such a setup that I didn't want it to happen. So I'm kind of glad things played out the way they did. And plus, like, Millie as a potential slayer, come on. That's so great.
It is kind of great. It is.
So Buffy and Spike take the girls to the demon bar, and they think it's all cool and funny, and they want to get a drink, except it's like all, like, what is it, yak piss or something? I don't even yak urine or something like that. And they're not so excited. And then Clem shows up.
Yay!
Who doesn't love Clem? Oh, he's so wonderful.
It's so great when they're just like, you know, this is the roughest, toughest place. And he's like, yeah. Buffy!
Clem! They hug and, like, do you think they did it too? And, like,
I saw a show so on funny. The History Channel I thought you'd like.
He's like, you're looking great.
Yeah, nice and toned. And it's just, I think, like, we needed that little bit of levity too. And we need to remember that, you know, Buffy's life is weird. Like, not only is it scary, but it's just weird. And I love, because in Angel, like, it's so clear that not all demons are bad guys. On Buffy, it's a little harder to see that because a lot of times they're just fighting everything. And we've had a very select few characters who have been good demons or good whatever they are. And Clem is one of them. And it's just nice that, you know, they hugged and everything. And it was super cute. But then, like, he does whatever he does with his face, scares the crap out of the girls. And that was also really wonderful. So I really love that. Okay, so yeah, back to Dawn. Dawn meets up with Millie and they try to take on this vampire on their own. And Dawn, you know, they have the voiceover part with Buffy talking to the potential slayers when they're fighting the one vampire in the nest. And then it kind of also applies to what Dawn is doing. And again, like, knowing in hindsight now that Dawn isn't a potential, but that she's just human and that she's just Buffy's sister, the fact that she's able to fend off the vampire and even the
bringers.
Thanks. I knew it started with a B. The bringers. It's cool that she's able to handle herself and that she knew her environment, like Buffy was saying, and she knew to turn on the gas and the fire and the pole as the stake, all of that. And in that moment, she also realizes that she's not a potential. And like Xander said, she had no problem handing that power over to Millie and letting Millie fight off the vampire. And she did. And she was actually kind of a badass as she did it. Instinct really took over for her.
Poor Amanda. She's never going to get her own name.
No, she's not. No, she's not. So what'd you guys think of that? Did you like Millie when she was fighting off the vampire and all of them?
I mean, yeah. I liked that Dawn... We've seen Dawn, like Dawn and Buffy made their peace with the fact that Dawn wasn't just going to sit by and watch all of them go off fighting all the time. Like, she's become a part of the team and a pretty decent part of the team. But like here, it was kind of nice to see her on her own. It took me back to when, you know, Buffy was fighting those first vamps and like when we were watching her kind of come into her own as the Slayer. Like, she didn't do everything right, and Dawn didn't necessarily do everything right here either, but mm-hmm. she knew how to stay alive. Like, she knew how to use her environment and all of that. Like, it took me back to watching those first few episodes of Buffy, and that's why I was really upset to find out she wasn't the potential, because it seemed, you know, it seemed right. It seemed like she just knew instinctively how to handle herself, and to find out that, you know, Millie or Amanda was really the one who has the like supernatural potential, it doesn't take anything away from what Dawn was able to do there, but it just, she's not the next Slayer. It's just, she's just not in the line, and that it's disappointing, but it was also nice that Millie was so embracing of it too. Like, in that moment, she didn't step away from it. Like, she took the broom handle and like took him down. Like, it was nice to see. It just, I didn't like what it meant for Dawn.
Yeah. But like you said, it doesn't take anything away from what Dawn is able to do. And I think that's another important lesson. And that's kind of what Xander has to say too, you know? And Caitlin, I see that part of Xander's speech is your favorite line. So we'll save a little more of that discussion for then, but let's get into our favorite scenes now for this episode. Mine is kind of wrapped up in all of this, and it's when, as funny as it is, it's when Buffy leaves all the potentials to die. You know, she is fighting the vampire in the nest, and the girls are kind of just watching and listening to her talk, and then she's, you're not a potential, you're dead. What do you do now? Right now, the only thing you know for sure is you got me. She drops the stake, she walks out with Spike, and they close the doors. And she really does leave the girls to fend for themselves. And at the end of the day, like, that was the right move. And they were able to kill the vampire. They did it as a team. It was a great bonding experience for them. It was a great lesson. And again, I'm so impressed by Buffy and the way that she's handling all of this, because Buffy is still very childlike sometimes. And I think that she still struggles with the weight on her shoulders, but now she has so many other people relying on her that she can't worry about that. And she's constantly said, look, I'm as scared as you are, but like, I know we're going to win this. I know we're going to come out on top. And it's that faith in the side of good that keeps her going. And to see her influencing those girls and inspiring them is just... Man, Buffy's come so far from season one, and I really love who she is in this moment.
I mean, I don't think she really left them to die. Like, they were just right outside the door. I'm pretty sure they would have come in if it looked like it was going to go bad.
Yeah, probably, but, like, part of me wants to say no. Part of me wants to say that Buffy had to learn her lessons the hard way, and she's going to have these girls learn their lessons the hard way. And I mean, again, there were like, what, 4 or 5 of them there. So even if one of them had gotten bitten, like, I think the others would have come to the rescue. But it was even more than like the idea that she did that, like the girls definitely thought she was for real. Yeah. And that was the lesson more than anything.
But I think she knows more than anyone that she can't afford to lose more.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. They need everyone they can get. Caitlin, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is Clem being the gift that he always is. And hilariously, like, Buffy convinces him to show his, like, true demon face or whatever. And that was amazing. And Clem is just the best. And he is a gift every time he is on screen.
Oh, he is. I love him. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was the scene we were talking about a little bit earlier where there's the voiceover on top of, like, Dawn, you know, assessing the situation and grabbing all the right resources, like, you know, a Slayer will use whatever is in reach, and she, like, grabs, like, the coat rack, and I liked that, because it was, like, two of the best things. It was, like, Dawn figuring out something and making, like, you know, showing that she has picked up all of this information over the past couple of years, and then Buffy being in that leadership position with the girls and, you know, imparting all of the lessons that she's learned to a new generation. So it's just a lot of goodness happening.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a great moment. And Kristen, your favorite scene?
I mean, how could it be anything but Xander and Dawn? I'm like the only person who doesn't hate Xander on a principle these days. And it's just, it was really nice to see him have a moment where he got to like share a little bit of his knowledge and his experience with all of this. Like, he's been there from the beginning, but again, he's not, you know, the supernatural one or the witch or any of that. Like, he doesn't necessarily want that either. He's found his place on this team, and he's, you know, he's ready to share his knowledge and what he does know with Dawn. And it was just a really nice moment for the two of them. And, you know, lovely moment for Xander, who doesn't always get the loveliest moments.
Yeah, that's for sure. And that's a good transition. So let's jump into favorite lines. And Caitlin, why don't you read out yours?
Yeah, so mine is Xander in that scene, because I said he is shockingly not awful in this final scene. He says, "They'll never know how tough it is, Donnie, to be the one who isn't chosen, to live so near to the spotlight and never step in it. But I know. I see more than anybody realizes because nobody's watching me. I saw you last night. I see you working here today. You're not special. You're extraordinary." And I think it's just very sweet. And Xander has had other moments where he's like tried to give pep talks, but he always undercuts them with some kind of gross innuendo. And he doesn't do it in this one. It's just the whole thing is heartfelt and he never ruins the moment. So for once in his life, he does something right.
Yeah. And I mean, I have to say, I don't hate Xander that much. I mean, I've hated things that he's done, but especially in moments like this, I remember that, like, it does kind of suck for him to be ordinary and to have to deal with all of this, because it's hard enough for the Slayer to kill vampires sometimes. And you have this normal guy just trying to help his friend out and trying to do the right thing. And it's difficult. And I kind of like that he's, there have been times, obviously, there's been whole episodes around the fact that he's kind of useless. And he's started to accept the fact that he doesn't have to be in that spotlight, that he can still feel fulfilled even though he's not the hero of the story, which is kind of like the whole point of the show anyway, that Buffy, the girl, the little blonde girl, is the hero of the story and not, you know, your stereotypical male action hero guy. And I don't know, I really love that about Xander, that he's accepted it and he's kind of imparting that knowledge onto Dawn. And the fact that nobody else was around to hear his grand speech and nobody else is there to kind of pat him on the back for leading Dawn in the right direction makes it even better to me. Xander was funny in this episode regardless, and Kristen, your line kind of reflects that.
Yes, it does. It was when Dawn was kind of freaking out about the Bringers, like somebody mentioned them and she was like, what if they saw the spell? And Xander goes, saw the spell? Dawn, they can't see flashcards. Big ones. Like, just, it's that Xander, you know, you can always count on him to say the smartass remark. And here, it just happens to be really true. Like, Dawn, they have no, like, their eyes, they don't work so well. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it just, it was a nice little line stuck in there in the middle of all that crazy.
Yeah. Brittany, what about you?
My favorite line was from Molly when they're like, she's like taking like very studious notes about what to do and what not to do when, you know, hunting and trying to kill vampires. And when Buffy's on top of Spike and she's like, so we're supposed to like make out with them or something?
That's hot.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. My favorite line was from Willow when she's getting ready to do the spell. And she goes, I got my tumbleweed, my eggs, my chrysalises, chrysali, my butterfly transformer pods. I don't know why that just like tickled me the way that it did, but butterfly transformer pods.
Reminds me of the issue with saying nemesis and nemesis.
It's just a little bit of like Willow's innocence. Like, we haven't seen a lot of it since she went, you know, full evil.
And
so it's nice to see her kind of get a little bit of that back. And I totally know what you mean here.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So if you guys would like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypeable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. As usual, we love to get iTunes reviews. It helps other people find our podcast. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will not kick you out of my home because you are a loyal friend and not a traitor like Cordelia.
We'll never not be bitter about this. Like, there's no hope.
Yeah. All right. So we only have 2 pieces of listener feedback this week. Both of them are from Twitter. And let's see. Brittany, why don't you take this first one?
Sure. So the first one is from Raven at Lots of Awesome, who says, my time hop told me it's been 2 years since I started my Buffy rewatch. Can't believe it's been 2 years. Yeah, well, I don't remember a time before Buffy, so it feels like it's been a lifetime.
I remember, like, at the start of this going, it's going to take us 2 years, and now we're like, it's been 2 years. Like, it seemed like such a daunting task, and now that we're, like, you know, nearing the end of this, it doesn't seem like it's taken us that long. It just... We've just
What?
I feel like it's been forever. I feel it's been eons.
I don't think I've, like, Avatar, I think that was a dream. Like, I don't think that actually happened. I think I've just been doing Buffy this entire time.
It was a fever dream.
Yeah, it was a fever dream. Boomy actually doesn't exist, you know?
Like, we've been doing it a while, but it just doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't feel like 2 years. Maybe I'm just bad with time.
Oh, that God, it feels like a lifetime.
I will say, now that we're near the end of Buffy, you know, we're halfway through the last season now, it feels a little weird to me. And I kind of don't want it to end because I really like where we are in Buffy right now. And I feel like everything is starting to pay off and things are happening and going in a direction that's actually maybe the newbies will like. Newbies as in Ariana and... and Brittany, because I think Mitch and Kristen are kind of on board, but
especially if Red Amy's around, Mitch is definitely
exactly. Yeah, I mean, I still feel like it's been eons, but I also can't believe we're so close to the end of Buffy. It just, it's very strange. Like, what else have we ever done with our lives? What are we going to do after this? I have no idea.
Like,
take a nap.
I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, wow, like, you know, I mean, we still have like 6 months left because we still have to finish Angel. Mm-hmm. But I was like, what are we going to do after this? And I'm like, you know what? I don't even care at this point. Just bring it on. Like, give me anything. Although I would like to be a super fan for like a hot for like a hot second. I'd like to be a super fan.
I would love that, honestly.
Kristen, I was actually looking last night, and I think we should do this is a complete tangent, but I was thinking, I'm like, oh, I know something that Kristen and I could be super fans on, which would be like either Studio 60 or Sports Night, because they're short. But
I've never watched Studio 60.
All right, well, you got time.
Well, right, but it was one of those. But I have watched Sports Night, and that show is so good.
Oh, like I feel like we could easily do that. No. It's like a Sorkin drama. It's not like about sports.
A sports cast.
Yeah,
like
about sports casters. Like it's not. Yeah. It's not sports all the time. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Baby Joshua Molina. Come on. So good.
Oh. So good. We'll see. I mean, people always are sending in suggestions to us, and I still have no idea. We'll probably do a vote either within Hypeable, or we'll let you guys pick or something. But it's gotta be short. Whatever it is, it's gotta be like a season, because we just need some variety at the moment.
So perfect.
Yeah.
Not about anything supernatural.
Yes. Okay, and our second Twitter comment, Caitlin, why don't you read this one?
Hey, Cassandra at Palliard says, can't wait to listen, hating the whining fashion challenged potentials so much. And
I love them.
I do not find them that offensive.
Me neither. I think that Molly's the British one, right?
Yeah.
She's super cute. I love her crazy style.
I love Rona.
Rona's
great. The greatest. Felicia Day. She's
the dotty, like lost one. Like she doesn't really know what this whole thing is about. Like,
yeah, she's there, trying, though.
She doesn't know what she's there for. Like, she's still figuring it out.
Yeah.
And then,
I think they're coming into their own, especially after this episode. I think that they're finally getting that message. And it's just interesting to see these new characters kind of so, like, right in the middle of everything after we've been with the Scoobies for so long. And it's interesting to see how they kind of twist things up. All right. Our next episodes are both going to be Angel. So it's time for Kristen's Contemplations and Brittany's Brainstorms. Angel 409, Long Day's Journey, and Angel 410, Awakening.
Okay. Well, since we can really only do one prediction, because I hate having, like, I don't mind having back-to-back episodes, but it's so hard to do predictions because you're like, well, whatever I predict for the first episode kind of dictates what happens the next episode. But Awakening, maybe everybody awakens to the fact that Connor is awful and that they should kill him. So no, whatever, they go through a long day's journey to figure that out.
I think that the awakening will be Cordy realizing that this isn't actually Cordy and like coming back to us as the real human being, because like, I still feel like she's in like the clouds. She doesn't, which is funny considering she was in the clouds. Like, I feel like she doesn't really understand. Like, she's not fully present. It just doesn't feel right. So I'm hoping that Awakening is like her getting all of her, you know, cloud person memories back and like fully being present again. Like, she just
cloud person.
I don't know, higher being, whatever it's called. Like, I want her to really be there now, like really get everything that's going on and not just be like the, I don't know what happened, I'm still choosing Connor, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, she needs to get all of her memories back and really be able to be present and helpful. Long Day's Journey, I don't even know. It's Wes's long day. I don't know. Dealing with Lila. I don't know. Something like that. Why not?
Anything could happen.
That's all I got.
Cool. Well, good guesses as always. We'll have to see what happens next week. Thank you everybody for listening once again. Hope you've been enjoying this. We are coming near the end. And it still blows my mind too. Like episode 244, guys. Holy cow. Like, a lot of us have been doing this since the beginning, and it's just crazy. I don't know. Maybe I'm just emotional today. I apologize. I have so many feelings. But I'm really proud, and I'm really happy, and this is cool. So yeah, hopefully you guys enjoy the next episodes, and we'll see what happens with Cordelia. No comment until then. But in the meantime, my name is Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.